And now for reading and writing and radio.
You've just heard is the shaking of the Boggle Cubes, preparatory to a game by three champion Boggle players. But you can play Boggle too.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Interrupting a three-week Boggle game to record this program, and we're right up to the wire because it's late on Saturday and this program goes on early on Monday, so it's now or never. But first things first, and this three-week period after Christmas, it's been Boggle, or else Scrabble or Perquacky, word games. And the sooner we get finished talking about words, the sooner we can get back to our game. Here with me at the card table in my living room are two word people. Not weird people, or not very, but word people. And we just put a little word person to bed a while ago, my granddaughter Cressida, who's 17 months and is visiting here from Reno with her mother Jillian. And Cressida is just learning to say words and to put them together. So she's saying shoe and horse and
more
and marble, juice. Yeah, and these people that you're hearing with me, these two word people, are my daughter Jillian and my daughter Megan. And you kids have been word people ever since you were little. Can you tell us any of your early experiences with words? What made you interested in words? Why do you like games like Scrabble and Boggle? Why do you grab the newspaper away from me to do the crossword puzzle?
Well, I guess they're fun when you're good at them. That's something, and I suppose we're good at them because we have large vocabularies. At least with crossword puzzles, I know that helps out a lot.
I enjoy the crossword puzzle because it's a Sunday way to spend a Sunday, and also to learn new words and do some thinking. The crossword puzzles are kind of tricky sometimes, and you have to learn to think the way that they do. And when they give you a clue, you have to remember that it's not always the obvious answer.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn to deal with their little quirks.
Now, of course, one way that you kids have developed large vocabularies, you read, of course, from an early age and read a lot, but we also did play a lot of word games, so that I think word games help increase vocabulary, and then, of course, the larger the vocabulary you get, the more interest you have in words
right.
And the easier they are for word games.
I think you get a lot of your words that you use from reading, but you get your favorite words from the word games, the ones that you don't use all the time.
Right, the neato exotic words.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a great variety of games that you play at the card table, for instance, like Boggle that we've been doing, or Scrabble, or Perquacky. There's a new one, Option, that we were trying out. And you taught me Giotto this Christmas. But I also remember when you were in church, for instance, that you would take the church program and take a... How did that game go?
A big, long word. You'd find the longest word you could find.
With the most variety of letters.
And then what would you do with it?
You sit in there and see how many words you can make out of the letters that are in the word. And you can only use each letter once.
Right, and you had to compete with your sister.
Right.
That was at the end of the sermon or whenever, then you would compare notes and figure out who'd found more words.
Out of one of those great long words on the program. Well, I think another way, too, that, well, we talked about the reading, but even before you began reading, you were read, too. And while Cressida has been here, we've been reading her the nursery rhymes. And the nursery rhymes are filled with wonderful words. And she is hearing those words and is going to be learning to say them. There was an old woman thrown up in a basket 19 times as high as the moon. Where she was going, I couldn't but ask it, for in her hand she carried a broom. Old woman, old woman, old woman, quoth I, oh, whither, oh, whither, oh, whither so high. That oh, whither is a nice word. And one misty, moisty morning when...
Chilly.
Foggy. Rainy.
Foggy was the weather.
There I met an old man clothed all in leather, clothed all in leather from his heels up to his chin. Well, how do you do, and how do you do, and how do you do again? Terrific words in the nursery rhymes, and terrific words in the... And here I'm not, you know, terrific. That's sort of an ordinary word. I should be saying there are precise, exact...
Punctilious.
Interesting and punctilious words in the nursery rhymes and in the better children's books that can be read to little children. Well, now I've kept a lot of the stuff that you kids did as you were growing up, and I've got a book that it's all in called Cinnamon Toast, and you had lots of word lists. Do you remember what any of those word lists were about?
In sixth grade, I had an assignment. They were teaching us about homonyms, and we were supposed to bring in five homonyms the next day.
Well, now that's an interesting word. What's a homonym? Am I saying that right? Homonym.
A homonym is two words that are spelled differently and mean different things, but are pronounced exactly the same.
Such as?
Well, let's think of one.
I like lead the metal, and lead meaning leading other people around.
Right. She led the little girl to the front row, or the lead pipe was heavy.
Okay, or how about dye and die? He dyed the clothes, and she died with one shot eye, and mouth awry, and arm on high, and waving goodbye, as I recall the old verse. Okay, those are homonyms. Okay, what were you saying about the list that you kept?
The whole family got into the act, and we must have gotten
hundreds, thousands,
at least.
Huh? Many more than the five. Did you turn in your five, or did you turn in 100?
I turned in my five. Well, I turned in probably a few more than five, because the teacher had made a few noises about how he would be surprised if anybody got that many. Something like that. So, of course, then that was a challenge, you know, and you had to go do it.
Well, then there were some other lists, not just die and die and...
The homonyms. Well, I've always been intrigued with a similar kind of word, which is words that mean differently but are spelled the same and pronounced differently.
Explain that.
The homonyms sound the same but are spelled differently.
These are words
that are spelled the same but sound differently, like bass, the fish, and bass, the instrument or the singing voice.
Okay, so both of those are B-A-S-S.
They're spelled the same.
And one is pronounced bass and means the fish, and one is pronounced bass and means like the bass viol, or he has a fine bass voice.
Or another one would be read, and read. You can read a book, but when you're done with it, you have read it.
Yeah, and they're both spelled the same, but they're pronounced differently.
And red has a homonym, too, also being the color red, which is a different word, and it's spelled differently, but it sounds just the same.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do they call those? Is there a word for it, Jill, for
there,
that
there
kind
There doesn't
of?
Seem to be a specific word. I asked somebody once, and they kind of looked lost and then said, well, I guess a homoscript or something like that, but they were just guessing.
Well, those would be
spelled the same. So you can call them anything you want. I just say those neat old words.
And then there was the kind of words that sound similar.
And mean exactly the opposite.
And mean exactly the opposite. You had fun with those, too. Can you remember any of those?
Well, the real easy and obvious one was feast and fast, and that's what got us started.
Feast and fast. They sound, they're similar sounding.
Close, yeah.
Close. And yet, one means
to... It'd
be good
in a little slogan.
To stoke up, and the other means to lay off, not to eat at all. And can you think of any of others of those?
Well, Bemmy's very favorite, and the only one that I really do remember, was timidity and temerity.
And timidity means?
Timid.
Timid and
shy.
Shy.
And what does temerity mean?
Bold and
outgoing.
So timidity, temerity are the two opposites there that are words the same in feel or sound, but meaning just the opposite.
And opposites, of course, are then antonyms.
What's an antonym?
Just opposites, that's all.
Just plain old opposites like stop and go.
Hot, cold, yeah.
And I suppose you could get those quite rarefied with different sorts of words, not just ordinary for opposites. I don't have any right on the tip of my tongue.
Actually, antonyms aren't terribly interesting.
They're not as interesting. Okay, what about acronyms?
It's just a neat word.
What's an acronym?
Acronyms are words like NASA, where each word in the word really stands for something else. NASA is what, National Aeronautics and Space Association?
Yeah, and a lot of the kids will have read a book that you girls read, I think, called The Rats of NIMH, and that's NIMH, that's the National Institute of Mental Health, isn't it?
Yes.
And so acronyms are...
And NOW, National Organization of Women, what's some other?
Okay, well, those aren't quite so interesting.
Palindromes are fun, though.
Well, what's a palindrome?
Palindromes are words that are exactly the same whether you spell them forwards or backwards, like level or radar. And you don't even have to stop at words. You can make phrases or sentences, or if you really got rolling, and you could even shoot for paragraphs or books, I suppose, but that might be... I don't know how really possible that is.
The most famous palindrome
sentence.
Of a sentence is what Adam said to Eve, supposed to be the first sentence ever spoken, was a palindrome, which was, Madam, I'm Adam. And that spells the same from the start and backwards.
Some people have names that are palindromes, like Otto.
That's right. O-T-T-O would be a palindrome.
Or Mom.
Yeah,
that's
Mom.
Right. And Dad.
Or Pop.
Uh-huh.
Those are palindromes. You kids have a game you call Dictionary or Fictionary. What's
that? Oh,
that's
fun. That's a fun game because you learn lots of new words and you have lots of fun doing it.
You get pretty silly, too.
There's lots of laughing when you play Fictionary. One person picks a word out of the dictionary that he's certain that nobody knows, and he carefully copies the definition. Well, then everybody makes up a definition just out of their own head and tries to make it sound the way the dictionary would write it out. And then the person who's it collects all of the definitions and reads them all without letting on which is the true definition. And then everybody has to decide which is the true definition. I guess the scoring can go just about any way that you want it to, though. I think, how did we score that?
There are two ways to get points. You get a point if you guess the correct definition. And you also get a point for everybody who guessed your definition as the correct definition.
So the more you can sound like
the dictionary,
the more points you can get.
I remember fourth grade was a year I didn't much care for. And there was two reasons. And one was long division, and the other was dictionary drill. And we had to look up all these words and copy them down, and that seems to me a singularly dull thing to do. But if you could be playing dictionary games rather than to just have to look up a bunch of words to show that you know how to do it, that would be a lot more fun.
Another game that's fun to play, especially in the car or somewhere...
Or in bed when you're supposed to be sleeping.
That's where we played it often. It's a game where one person starts and says a letter, and then each person has to add a letter to the letters that have already been accumulated. And the point is that you cannot be the one to end the word. If you add the final letter onto the word, then you lose that round. And it can be very challenging when the word is already almost finished and you have to quick come up with a new way to add the ing instead of the e so that it will land on somebody else.
Okay, that's what's that called? Ghost?
That's called ghost. I don't know why.
When you lose, you get a G, and then the next time you lose, you get an H until, and then the game's finally over when somebody collects all of ghost, and they're the ghost, and that's the end.
That's right. Each time you lose a round, you have to add a letter, the G, the H, the O, and then when you're the ghost,
so that even the scoring is a spelling game.
That's
we had a program recently called Fairies in a Frenzy, where a young man read a long, fun poem that he'd written that had a lot of alliteration in it. And I think alliteration is fun. And when I was in fifth grade, I memorized a tongue twister that our teacher gave us that had, it was Gilbert and Sullivan, I think. Lots of good words in it. To sit in solemn silence in a dull, dark dock in a pestilential prison with a lifelong lock, awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock from a cheap and chippy chopper on a big black block.
Okay.
Yeah, all those different alliterations.
Yeah, and then I think that must be the Mikado, yes?
I think so. And then there's wonderful words in poetry. When I was in eighth grade, we had to memorize parts of Shelley's, I think it was Shelley, To a Skylark. Hail to thee, blithe spirit, bird thou never wert, that from heaven or near it pourest thy full heart in profuse strains of unpremeditated art. And I remember discovering that wonderful word, unpremeditated. That means you don't think about it ahead of time. So the skylark pours out unpremeditated art. His songs haven't been made up ahead of time.
One way to find new words that you don't hear very often or use very often is to read old books, the books that were written before the 19th or the 18th.
In the 1800s.
In the 1800s, right.
Yeah.
Because their speech patterns were different, and they often used words that we don't use much anymore.
Or used them in different ways than what's common now.
We've talked about some interesting words while we were playing Boggle. One of our favorites that we've used in Hangman and other games and so forth is syzygy. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. It's an astronomical term, syzygy, and it's wonderful. And then we sometimes use eerie, because that's got three E's in it.
Very clever.
And it confounds people in Hangman.
And in Jotto.
And
all those words with only Y's in them are all very good, like crypt.
The best word I ever found for Hangman was ketchup. For some reason, nobody ever notices that you're making ketchup.
And what about strength? That's got eight letters in it, and it's only got one vowel.
And then there's facetiously, that has all five vowels, in fact, and also Y, as its only vowels exactly in order. A-E-I-O-U,
that's
and Y.
That's a neat one.
Another way you learn new words is through games, is you keep challenging people on words and having to go to the dictionary to look it up. And while you're in the dictionary, you notice all the adjoining words. And we just ran into wiglia, which is
Wait, gray. Wiglia, do you remember how you spelled it?
W-I-E-G-L-I-A, is that
Yeah,
it?
I think that's right.
Like that.
It's a color of red, which is yellower than cerise, but lighter than turkey red, if that tells you anything.
So you can say to somebody when you see them next, oh, what a beautiful wiglia shirt you have. And they won't know what you're talking about. You can tell them it's less than a turkey red. Well, I've been reading a book, as you know, recently, and telling you a lot about it, called Father and Son by Edmund Gosse. And I'm not going to tell the kids listening the whole story of it, but it's an autobiography, and he was brought up in a strange sort of way. For instance, he didn't read a storybook. He didn't know there was such a thing as a storybook until he got to be 11 or 12. He was so held away from
isolated.
This sort of thing. Isolated, yeah.
He was only allowed to read his school books.
And he was educated at home. He didn't go to school. And he didn't talk to another child. He hadn't carried on a conversation with another child until he was over 8 years old. He didn't know any children. When he was about 12, his father, well, here, I'll read you about what he said. Okay, now Edmund is about 12 years old at this time. He says, "The great subject of my curiosity at this time was words as instruments of expression. I was incessant in adding to my vocabulary and in finding accurate and individual terms for things." Let's see. "My father possessed a copy of Bailey's Etymological Dictionary, a book published early in the 18th century. Over this I would pore for hours, playing with the words in a fashion which I can no longer reconstruct, and delighting in the savor of the rich, old-fashioned country phrases. My father, finding me thus employed, fell to wondering at the nature of my pursuit, and I could offer him, indeed, no very intelligible explanation of it. He urged me to give up such idleness and to make practical use of language. For this purpose he conceived an exercise which he obliged me to adopt, although it was hateful to me. He sent me forth, as it might be, up the lane to Warbury Hill, and round home by the copses, or else down one chine to the sea and along the shingle to the next cutting in the cliff, and so back by way of the village. And he desired me to put down in language as full as I could all that I had seen in each excursion. As I have said, this practice was detestable and irksome to me, but as I look back, I am inclined to believe it to have been the most salutary, the most practical piece of training which my father ever gave me. It forced me to observe sharply and clearly, to form visual impressions, to retain them in the brain, and to clothe them in punctilious and accurate language." Now, he's using some awfully good words there to talk about it. We used punctilious earlier. It means exact. What are some of the other ones? Salutary, the most salutary and practical piece of training. That's what?
Helpful.
Useful.
Useful.
Right. And how about detestable and irksome? What if you were to say to your teacher, "That job is irksome to me"? I think it would get a smile and maybe a relinquishing of the word, of the work. And copses, those are woods. Down one chine, I had to look that one up. That's a narrow gorge or ravine. But what I think I'll suggest for all you kids for your writing for this week is to try to clothe your thoughts in some punctilious and accurate language. Do something with the fascination of words. Your favorite word games, exotic words, precise words, individual words, special words.
And now, let's get back to Boggle.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.